T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
6:45, Tommy Tucker, WWL, our Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll asking you, do you think the U.S. was right to kill Qassem Soleimani? 90% of you are saying yes, only 10% are saying no. One thing that surprised me was the level of fear, panic. I guess if you go by social media and some of the traditional media with Iran, and as though we were talking about some kind of showdown between China and the United States. Jeff McCausland, our friend, retired major, joins us now, CBS military analyst, Colonel Jeff McCausland. Sorry about that, sir.
That's quite all right, Tom. I appreciate it.
Did that surprise you? And I know this is a subjective thing, but Colonel, about the panic and fear, and it just seemed disproportionate to me.
Well, the American people, frankly, let's face it, Tom, are tired of what's in the military referred to as the Long War, which has now been going on for almost 19 years. And in the course of that, of course, we've seen, you know, somewhere around 4,500 Americans killed in Iraq, about 2,500 killed in Afghanistan, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000 wounded, many grievously. And that hangs heavy over many American homes very directly and the American psyche more broadly. So when you start talking about this particular conflict and you talk about, you know, we're doing this based on intelligence that is ironclad, but nobody's willing to explain what that intelligence looks like. I think many people hearken back to the intelligence which was ironclad about weapons of mass destruction in 2003, which got us into a war in Iraq, and we suffered those grievous casualties. And people are wise enough, I think, to realize that there's no doubt the United States has overwhelming military power. Let's be honest. They know two things. One, that Iran would be a significantly greater conflict than the war with Iraq. It's about 80 million people, geographically about twice the size, has a much more sophisticated military than the Iraqis had back in 2003. And though the United States probably would be, in military terms, at least successful, we also know that the United States is not only vulnerable to those casualties I suggested, but wide-ranging issues, and that being something like terrorist attacks that might reach out across the world, or cyber attacks. And I think all those things add up to the fear you're seeing in many people's minds.
You worked in military intelligence, did you not?
Well, I worked with military intelligence and with the Central Intelligence Agency a lot when I was in the Pentagon, of course, and when I was working on the National Security Council staff in the White House.
So the reason I ask that, Colonel, is that intelligence is never 100%, is it?
No, it's never 100%. You can get pretty doggone close based on, you know, probabilities and whatever. But no, and you try to get it from all different sources, HUMINT, SIGINT, satellite imagery, et cetera, to confirm what exactly you think your adversary is up to. The other problem you have with intelligence, which I think happened in 2003, is frankly, if you start with the answer, you can work backwards and find intelligence that will support almost any answer you want to come up with.
You know, I saw it stated both ways, that the president, the United States, stood down. I saw that Iran stands down. Is Iran done retaliating? Are we done retaliating? Are we likely to see more attacks from Iran? Are we likely to launch more attacks or selective assassinations, if you will? And I don't say that in a bad way. I know it sounds terrible, but are we likely to see more of that? Or for the time being, at least, has everybody stood down?
Well, for the time being, they've stood down. What I mean by that is we have moved back towards the shadow war that we've been in with the Iranians for a number of years, and we moved away from the direct overt war that we seem to be heading towards in the aftermath of the killing of Soleimani and then perhaps these missile attacks by the Iranians against American bases. And in that shadow war, once again, we might see the Iranians conduct a series of attacks around the world. And we often use that word, the Iranians do this, the Iranians do that, the Iranians do something else, as if they are a complete unitary actor, which I'm not sure is entirely correct. Clearly, you have the Iranian government. They're a recognized nation state in the international community, which makes this whole thing quite different, frankly, than dealing with Al-Qaeda or dealing with ISIS. But we've seen repeated times in the last several decades where the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and the Quds Force that Soleimani headed up at times seemed to operate almost as an independent actor at times in that country. And they might find what occurred in the missile attacks against the U.S. bases less than satisfying. And then second, of course, there's a whole bunch of other actors in the region, most notably Shiite militia groups that are in Iraq that are sanctioned, by the way, and I want to stress this, sanctioned by the Iraqi government, popular mobilization forces that were key in the physical defeat of ISIS, oh, by the way, but receive an awful lot of supply and direction from the Iranians. They serve, if you will, two masters. They were very, very upset about this assassination or killing, however you want to describe it, because not only did we kill Soleimani, but we killed a guy named al-Mohandas and several other Iraqis. Al-Mohandas was the head of the Hezbollah Brigade, which is one of the leading popular mobilization forces in Iraq, again, populated by Iraqis. And so we might see those groups exact their vengeance against the United States by attacks on U.S. troops and facilities in the country. It was that brigade, oh, by the way, that were most of the folks outside of the American embassy there around New Year's Day. And we've seen evidence that brigade has called for suicide bombers to sign up in Iraq. And we've furthermore seen Muqtada al-Sadr, one of the leading clerics in Iraq and a leading head of the mobilization forces, activating two additional brigades of his Mahdi army. And his Mahdi army fought the Americans in the streets of Baghdad in fierce battles back in 2006 and 7. So any of those groups might react, or you could see Hezbollah in Lebanon, who's supported by the Quds Force in Soleimani or Hamas or even the Houthi rebels in Yemen. But it'll be done in a fashion that there's a proxy and therefore a degree of deniability by the Iranians.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. When we come back, Colonel, you can answer this. It seems as though it's a strictly partisan response on Capitol Hill, other than maybe one or two Republicans that broke ranks in terms of the security briefing. And I guess when it comes to intelligence, and I know we have a lot of knowledge on a lot of these people and where they are, how do you prove or disprove imminent attack? And is that what all of this hinges on? We'll try to get an answer from that, or we will, from Colonel Jeff McCausland. Right now it's 6:52, and it'd be time for traffic here on WWL. 6:57, 3 before 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Colonel Jeff McCausland about Iran. So, Colonel, you know, we killed Anwar al-Awlaki, who was an American from Michigan, I think, who was in Yemen at the time, a terrorist. So I would think, intelligence-wise, when we keep pretty close tabs on these guys. Now, when it comes to imminent danger, as they refer or relate, as it relates to Soleimani, how do you determine that? Because if he was in the middle of planning something, you could say an attack was imminent. Given this guy's history, you could say an attack was always imminent. I don't think it's quite fair to say that he had to have a suicide vest on in order for an attack to be imminent, is it?
Well, I mean, there's two questions there. First of all is, you know, what is sort of the legal basis for killing this guy? And second is a question of imminence, okay? In terms of legal basis, we killed al-Awlaki, we killed Osama bin Laden, we killed the head of ISIS.
And al-Awlaki was an American citizen.
He was an American citizen, right. That's true. But he had been declared a terrorist, and as a consequence, he was taken out as an individual, okay, as was Baghdadi, as was Osama bin Laden. And we did that, frankly, now moving from legality to practicality, when those two organizations, to a large degree ISIS and to a lesser degree al-Qaeda, had been not quite defeated, but had been huge setbacks in place against them. Now, you move on to Soleimani, and of course, he is a government official. He is, without question, in the international community, recognized as a leading military political leader of a recognized nation, that being the Islamic State of Iran. We may not like the Iranians, but there's a lot of countries around the world we may not like too much. And he was a member of that particular government. So taking him out is a different question, because, you know, it has wider implications in the international community, and suggesting, you know, norms that may in fact be changed if we in fact start doing this. We've had Indian leaders, for example, over the last few days saying, well, under this sort of logic, why don't we start taking out using drones Pakistani generals, because we don't like them a whole lot either, and we think they plan attacks against us, which they probably do. Now, the question of imminence, to say that Soleimani was planning, you know, operations against the United States and its interests in the region would like be saying it was another day at the office in many ways for Soleimani. To me, this is what this guy did and has been doing for the last two decades.
Colonel, we'll probably talk to you again next week about this. It's a very complicated, fluid situation. Thank you, sir, for your time.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.